It's time for the talk of the Northwest, the 9 to noon show with Greg Hughes on Highland Radio.
Hello, good morning to you. It's the start of another week here on the 9 till noon show. It's Monday the 15th of January 2024, and I do hope you're very well indeed. How are you all keeping? How was your weekend? Let us know if there's anything you want us to talk about. We can add it to the running order, so to speak. You can get in contact with us right now. The lines are open for you. 086 60 25000, 086 60 25000, WhatsApp and text. Now, also, of course, that number is good for you whenever you're listening to this show. So if you're listening on a podcast or if you're listening overnight, feel free to get involved in the conversation. It's great to have you on board. If you want to give us a call, it's 074 91 25000. From outside the Republic of Ireland, 00353 749 125000. And your emails from anywhere in the world, comments@highlandradio.com. And just an early invite for you, if it suits your lifestyle, maybe you work from home or you work in the home, you can watch us on your smart TV. Most of the TVs, like the one over my shoulder here, have the YouTube app built in. You can dial in Highland Radio Ireland and watch us on your big screen, or if you've got one of those Fire Sticks as well, the YouTube app preloaded on most of those, or Google TV for that matter. And you can take us with us, take us with you on that device across your mobile devices, because we're also on X, streaming across the world, and Facebook, Highland Hub, Highland Radio News and Sport. Okay, let's get to the newspapers this morning. The Derry People, Donegal News, calls it to be made for the immediate inspection of all fire hydrants in Letterkenny to ensure that they are fit for purpose. Concern emerged in December after Donegal Fire Service was alerted to a fire in a two-storey semi-detached house in Meadowbank Lane in the town, but struggled to access water due to a clog in the closed fire hydrant. Firefighters had to go for further to another fire hydrant before they got access to water. While no one was injured in the incident, it prompted fears locally. We had spoken to a family affected in the same way, of course, if not the same family. And the reason they spoke out in the immediate aftermath of the awful shocking events for them, thankfully no one was injured, was to A, thank the emergency services for their response, but also to highlight the fact that some of these hydrants can be blocked, and there needs to be a an assessment of all of that. So good to see Councillor McMonagall on the same page there. The Derry News this morning. Derry man waits 4 years for dementia diagnosis. I went to the doctor in June 2018 and was diagnosed in April 2022. 2 months shy of 4 years. That's a shocking length of time. Graham, a Dimension Northern Ireland member from Derry, had to wait for his onset, his young onset dementia diagnosed. That was from initial referral to receiving a diagnosis, Graham told the Derry News. Now, I wonder, is that an isolated incident, or is that the normal waiting time? It's an awful long time to be waiting. On to the Irish Independent now, and they have statistics on where Ukrainians are living in Ireland. And I posted up some statistics yesterday or at the weekend as it relates to, and I'll mention them to you, as it mentioned to IPAS and where people are living. And I pointed out that quite a lot of them have been located to Donegal. And it is quite surprising the amount of people that don't want you to talk about that or to say that or to put that out there, because they believe it's whipping up some sort of a, you know, by simply talking about the figures, that it's whipping up ill feeling. My argument would be the ill feeling is there or not. And we can't have information being suppressed or not talked about because some people interpret a certain way. Everyone's going to interpret things differently. Well, there are 58,528 Ukrainians in short-term accommodation in this country. And counties, we read, on the west coast of Ireland are housing a higher proportion of Ukrainian refugees who fled the Russian invasion, new figures show. Kerry is hosting the highest number of Ukrainians, even more than Dublin, and far more than any East Coast or Communabelt county outside the capital. The figures show that along with Kerry, counties Donegal, Galway, Clare, Cork and Mayo have a far higher percentage portion of the overall numbers of Ukrainians accommodated by the state compared to the rest of the country. In Donegal, it is 2,259. There are two figures here, one in brackets and one not in brackets. In Sligo, 1,807. Mayo, 2,916. Clare, 3,763. Kerry, 7,292, which I wonder, is that linked to the levels of tourism accommodation? We in Donegal, obviously a big tourism county. Kerry also. Kerry has 7,200, well, virtually 7,300 Ukrainians living there in short-term accommodation. In Donegal, it's 2,259. In terms of IPAS and the amount of people that are living in various areas, Donegal has a high rate of, it's a high rate when you look at it nationally, but there are other ways of looking at it as well. There are 1,686 IPAS occupants living in Donegal. That's 6.4% of the total IPAS occupations nationwide. Now, these are people from various countries, not Ukraine, that are fleeing war, or at least that's what they claim they are, until such time as they're assessed, and that's deemed to what is deemed to be the case. Now, the reality is 1,686 is a lot, but it is one in every 100 people, which is, some might say, is a very low percentage, because obviously the narrative out there is that the country is being completely overrun. But here in Donegal, with the highest rate of IPAS occupancy, it's one in 100. Now, maybe for some that's too high. For others, they might go, wow, I thought it would be more than that. But anyway, those are the statistics, and you can do, you know, it's up to you what you think about those. Donegal is taking, per head of population, per 100,000, the second highest rate of IPAS applicants, and also a very high rate there of Ukrainians. So those are simply the statistics which I'm bringing you this morning. They're being broadly reported right across the country, because it is obviously a topic of great interest. The Irish Times this morning: the Medical Council has complained about junior doctors being required to do mundane negative tasks that it says should be performed by nurses and other health workers. A failure to transfer tasks from non-consultant hospital doctors to nurses is having a negative impact on the education of trainee doctors and on Ireland's ability to attract and retain doctors, it claims. The tasks include taking bloods from patients, putting in drips, and nurse-led discharging of patients. While these tasks must be learned, completing them on a frequent and regular basis adds to the trainee doctor's workload, quickly loses its educational value, and deprives them of potential learning opportunities elsewhere, according to Una O'Rourke, Director of Education and Training at the Medical Council. So you can see where that could be problematic. On to the Irish Daily Mail now. An urgently needed new housing projects are under threat from anti-immigrant protesters, politicians fear. Now, I'm not really convinced about this at all, reading on to the story. Government TDs have expressed concerns that homes will be burnt down amid calls to cut rates for long-term Ukrainian refugees. The TDs are focusing their anger on Integration Minister Roderick O'Gorman and Justice Minister Helen McEntee as the government faces the threat of losing independent support. One of Fine Gael's former frontmen, Ivan Yates, warns immigration is becoming the zeitgeist issue in Ireland. Fears are escalating across rural Ireland as the government is struggling to hold the centre political ground, despite pledges on provision, providing continual information, and a plan to deal with the number of international protection applicants entering the country. A Fianna Fáil TD says rural Ireland is in uproar. It is though they are closing down rural Ireland. Housing, nursing homes are all being taken over. We appear to have no vision for rural Ireland beyond it being a holding pen for refugees. But I mean, the widespread arson of is there a widespread fear of arson attacks? Maybe there is. I don't know. on to the Irish Daily Star. You're nearly 50, just turning 50. Fancy you go in the Guards? It can be really quite attractive. The starting salary is around about €35,000. But that can be boosted with, if you're on duty at certain times and what have you, you get a lift from that. There's lots of overtime available, apparently, and you can get up to 55 grand in 8 years. So by the time you're 58, you could be on 55 grand. That's if you're 50 going into the Guards. Garda Commissioner Drew Harris has called for people from all backgrounds to join the force on the day the age limit for applications is raised to 50. A new €400,000 recruitment campaign launches this morning, and Mr. Harris insists being a Garda is a job worth doing. He said, "We want and need people from all backgrounds and communities to be Gardaí. Already we have one of the highest proportion rates of female officers in Europe, but we know there is more to do to meet our aim of being fully representative of the people we serve." Are you thinking about going for the Guards? Let us know. 086 60 25,000. Is it something that seems attractive to you? You know, in that age group, 35 to 50, it's a little easier to do the exercising stuff. They have it's graded for age and gender. So you don't have to do necessarily the same physical exertion that a 23-year-old recruit might have to. On to the Sun this morning, and TD Bernard Durkin is taking his battle of the balls to Lotto HQ as he rages against the odds. The jackpot rolled over for the 25th time on Saturday. I don't do the lotto, so it doesn't bother me, but for some people it might bother them, so that's why I'm reading it. The prize for the lotto has now climbed to more than €13 million. It has not been won since October 11th last year, almost 100 days ago. Fine Gael rep Durkin railed against the rollovers and will now pay a visit to Lotto HQ on Saturday to act as an independent witness to a live draw as part of his campaign last week. The paper revealed how the veteran TD is planning to raise the Lotto's unwinning streak with Public Expenditure Minister Pascal Donoghue in the Dáil this week when politicians return to Leinster House. But it's not owned by the state anymore. I mean, does it have to be fair? You know, you buy your tickets, you know the odds. It is a bit of, I always seen it really as a poor man's tax or poor person's tax, in that, you know, when you see yourself as having no real option of acquiring masses of wealth, you know, what do? You spend probably money that you don't have to try and become that person. It's crazy. And the wealth split in this country is unbelievable. Hopefully going to bring you some details a little later on of the way the wealth is spread in this country. It's absolutely shocking. The top 2 billionaires, and I'm doing this off the top of my head, the top 2 billionaires in this country have more than, I think it's the bottom, I don't want to read the wrong stats anyway, but it's 35, 50% of the rest of the population. It's absolutely crazy. And we have a group of billionaires, 4 or 5 billionaires in the world, right, who have accumulated so much wealth. One of them is going to become a trillionaire, at least one of them, in the next while. Whilst the world has gone to pot over the last 5 years, their wealth has grown absolutely massively. And whilst they're getting richer, more and more people right across the world, and I think we're stopping to think globally more than we ever did, but are unable to feed themselves. These are children. Like, you have someone like Elon Musk, who is, by certain people, is seen as this champion, this person to look up for, this amazing human being. And maybe he is, because he allows you to say certain things on Twitter, if that's what it's all about. But he's one of the group of 5 people that could eliminate the problems of the world if they wanted to. But instead, they continued to acquire their wealth. I don't know what the solution is. I don't know what politically spreading that wealth around a little bit would achieve, or what you'd be labelled as social. I don't have a clue what it is. But anyway, it just is horrendous. Speaking of money, though, and things are going to get a little bit tetchy in the north, because there are strikes upcoming, and there's accusations that money that could stop these strikes is being used to put pressure on the DUP. DUP leader Gavin Robinson said it would be blackmail for the UK to leverage funding for the north against the demand of the party on post-Brexit trading arrangements. I'm not sure, other than DUP, if anyone's interested in that now. It seems such a long time ago. But it comes amid a Sinn Féin bid to recall Stormont on Wednesday, the day before the largest public sector strikes in decades. I think there's never been a coordinated strike like this in the north. Thursday is also the deadline for Secretary of State Chris Heaton-Harris to call an assembly election if Stormont has not been restored. And what it really boils down to is there's pay rises for lots of public workers that can't be delivered, or pay increases that can't be delivered because the money to do so is subject to there being a devolved government. So there's right across teachers, nurses, ambulance drivers, they're all striking on Thursday. And really, it's putting pressure on the DUP to go back into government, because if they do, then this €700 or €800 million is released, and they get their pay rises. So the DUP are claiming, is this blackmail? It feels like blackmail. But they have their red lines. As I say, though, outside of the DUP, I'm not sure how many are interested in those red lines. Okay. We say good morning now to Councillor Jerry McMonagle. Good morning, Jerry. Thanks for your time today. Jerry, can you hear me? Okay, he's just joining or whatever. Jerry, when you can hear me, you might just let me know. Just to clarify, by the way, the speed limit on the four lanes coming into or going out of Letterkenny, just to be absolutely clear, we wanted to make sure that we got the official info from the council. And it says significant improvements to the N56 four-lane road were completed late last year. Signage is in place exiting the Polestar roundabout and the Dry Arch roundabouts to inform the posted speed limit of 60 kilometres per hour. Right, let's see. Jerry, can you hear me?
Yeah.
Okay, lovely stuff. Great to have you on board. Just a quick one, and I don't want to spring this on you. It's just for an initial comment before we talk about what we invited you on to talk about. We've been notified from a listener that there are 10 Donegal Garda cars sitting in a compound in a garage waiting to be serviced. They conclude that this means patrol cars are off the road across the country in the meantime, and some of the cars in there have reached their mileage limit, 200k, and need service to be released again. From this listener's understanding, another example of lack of resources up here. I'm sure we don't have 10 spare Garda cars to be sitting waiting to be serviced. It's certainly something maybe worth making an inquiry about.
Yeah, certainly would. It seems an inordinate amount of cars to be getting service at the one time. As you said, we have been campaigning for more cars for quite a while with the JPC and indeed with the Garda Síochána. So, you know, it sounds strange that there are 10 cars in getting serviced at the same time. And while that's welcome and they're going to be roadworthy, you would imagine after that, it would nearly smack off bad management or crisis management that 10 cars have to be in at the same time.
Yeah, indeed. Right, okay. Well, thanks very much for that, Jerry. You are making calls, or you're making calls. Okay, that line's just not fantastic for us this morning. I'll just wait till it's rectified, because we were reading this morning that calls are to be made for the immediate inspection of all fire hydrants in Letterkenny to ensure that they are fit for purpose. Concerns emerged in December after Donegal Fire Service was alerted to a fire in a two-storey semi-detached house in Meadowbank Lane in the town. Councillor McMonagle, you're raising this issue. In fairness, I think in a very difficult time for them, we did have another a family on this programme wanting to speak publicly because they were concerned about the fire hydrant infrastructure. You're taking up this this issue yourself as well. No, that line has... sorry. Go ahead, Jerry. I might come back to you because your signal is absolutely brutal there. So I'm going to come back to Jerry McMonagle on that in a moment. There's no point continuing if we can't hear what he has to say. Is anyone else having trouble with gov.ie and RSA websites? I've been trying to book a driving test this past week and I've had no luck. I've written my password, Dan, and when I go to log in, it doesn't recognise my details, so I registered again using my same email, and it tells me that it's already in use. So how come it doesn't recognise me when I sign in? I can't even call anyone, as all this has to be done online. I can't believe that I'm the only one having trouble with this, as I'm not a silly person, and I know my way around the computer. Tried signing in with gov.ie and having trouble with that site as well. Is there any way that I can get to speak to a human to book my test? Any advice appreciated? Right, if any of you have any suggestions as to what that person can do, 086 60 25000. The gov.ie website can be a little bit complicated. There's just no doubt about that in terms of signing in, and sometimes it's connected to a text and what have you. But anyway, I'm sure someone out there will be able to tell us what the situation is. All right, Councillor McMonagle, sorry about that. There's just a slight issue with the internet. Right, so you are calling what, for a county-wide review of our fire hydrants, or what do you think is required?
Well, initially, because we're in the Letterkenny MD, I'm calling and asking that we would have an inspection of all fire hydrants in the MD, but I think it needs to go across the county. I mean, it's worrying when you come across, I'm sure for the fire service, as much as the people that when the fire brigade responds to a call out and they find that the fire hydrant they go to nearest to the fire is blocked up. That's a major concern. It takes time, and it could lead to very much more damage to the property than what might be necessary, and also could lead to people being seriously hurt or worse. And it's a real concern for us that this has happened, and we're asking now whoever, because there seems to be a grey area. I've been talking to the fire service, and there seems to be a grey area as to who's responsible for ensuring that the fire hydrants are working properly and are fit for purpose. So I just want to get clarity on that and confirmation that these fire hydrants will be checked and regularly checked, and that they ensure that they're fit for purpose.
Yeah, for all the rules that sort of, you know, lead to sacrifices almost from fire personnel in terms of how close they are to the station, how quick they respond and what have you, it's clear that every second counts. So the last thing they need when they get geared up, get to a site, is to try and access water, and where they expect water to be, it not to be there. That's completely unacceptable, isn't it?
Very much so. And it's not an isolated incident. I know it's happened in the past as well. And also another problem with the fire hydrants is being able to identify the location. I know, especially at night time when they arrive and a call, and if they start looking in the streets to see where the hydrants are, they're not clearly marked as the way they used to be. And again, this is a fall down, and maybe it's fallen between the stools. Who's responsible for clearly outlining and marking the fire hydrants from other utilities, manholes? So it's something we need to look at. The other thing, I mean, you think in this time and age, and I asked them, I said, surely you would have an app that would identify when you go into an area where the fire hydrants are, and apparently they don't. And that's maybe a job of work that somebody could be involved in mapping out where the hydrants are and then getting them into a map, into an app that could be supplied to the fire service. You know, because all these things save time, and they'll save lives in the long run. They'll certainly save, you know, the extent of damage that might be done to buildings, whether it's businesses or family homes.
So you're sort of saying to the Letterkenny MD, it's over to you, it's over to the executive to find out who's responsible and who might, you know, put together this kind of information. It's not really fully clear yet. Is that what you're saying?
Yeah, like, you know, since Irish Water and Eskairn, as it's known as now, took over the water supply and provision from the councils in 2014, over this last number of years, they've been slowly but surely taking full control. And just recently, they have now full control of all water services and delivery and maintenance of. So it would have been in the past, because I remember during town council days, you would have seen them testing the hydrants so that they're sure that they're working and all, mm-hmm. by the council. So I don't know now, is that responsibility off the council? Is it with Eskairn, or is it with the fire service? So we need clarity on that, Greg. We need to, and more importantly, we need to ensure that when the fire service arrive at a given scene, that they know they can go straight as quick as possible to the nearest hydrant, and that hydrant is going to be working and be able to access water from it.
Yeah, texter, a caller rang us and we were chatting to them, says, I'm an ex-fire service person. The hydrants are inspected as part of the fire service drill. Half of them are not in use when needed, and that's the responsibility of the council, or at least maybe during their term it was the council. I think you're sort of seeking clarity. Is it the council? Is it Irish Water? What is the inspection programme? There's lots of questions there, I think, that should be simple to answer, councillor, that you'll be seeking some clarity on.
Yeah, and look, and there is inspections, that's welcome, but then what happens if they find a defective hydrant? What's the process then? Does it go to the council? You would imagine the council would respond to that there promptly. So if we can get that map and we can see, right, who checks them, who's responsible for maintenance, because the council are no longer anything to do with the maintenance or the delivery of water services. That's Eskairn now. So have they got a programme in place? Have they made provision for that? Have they got personnel to do that? Them's all the things I'm seeking clarity on. But most importantly, I want to be sure that when the fire service are called out, the next time they come out, that there's going to be hydrants that are fit for purpose and working properly.
Okay, fair enough. Thank you very much for that. That's Councillor Jay McMonagall there. We were speaking to Eamon Ryan on Friday. We had this email in, the 9 till noon show, and Minister Ryan's proposal. I'm not quite sure it was a proposal, but anyway, his proposal to involve the SEAI in the MICA compensation scheme to bring the affected houses up to today's building standards, particularly re-insulation. They go on to say the SEAI has had contractors on their lists for whom the SEAI takes absolutely no responsibility since at least 2019, who did substandard defective work to people's homes, damaged them in the process, despite SEAI commissioned research by UCD, which was presented to the Oireachtas, which stated that at least 50% of SEAI retrofitted homes were affected. There's been no mention of compensation redress for those homeowners. Can you warn the MICA compensation group of this? And can an SEAI compensation group be made a subsection of the MICA group instead of having to go from scratch through the same torturous process the MICA group went through to get compensation? Please let me know the answers. I have solid evidence to back up these claims.
Okay.
That's that person's view. I appreciate it. Good morning, Greg. My daughter has always had poor chest health due to asthma. With the RSV and flu doing the round, she's been very unwell and has missed a good few days at school. The rules of the current virus say you should be 48 hours symptom-free before returning to public life, yet I got a notification that I've almost reached my 20 days absenteeism from school and the school would have to notify TUSLA. I've never heard anything as ridiculous. My child is sick and also I'm obeying the government rules about this flu. No wonder this country is in crisis it's in. There appears to be no common sense at all anymore. The one thing I would say to you, obviously, especially if you're a parent, a TUSLA can be kind of like a scary word. Some people don't have a great deal of time for TUSLA and what have you, but there is a procedure in place to protect children who are off school for other reasons. Okay, maybe there are issues going on in the house or whatever it might be. So there has to be some sort of rules and regulations at what point absenteeism triggers a call from TUSLA. I wouldn't be afraid of that phone call. You just say to them precisely what you've just said to me. And there should be no issue. But I think if we sort of got away with something like that, we could have a child who is being kept at home for the wrong reasons, that's being abused in the house or whatever it might be. They could be 20 days absent from school. And if we didn't have a system that could pick that up, it would be quite troubling as well. So you've done nothing wrong. You're offering great care for your child. Even if TUSLA speak to you, I'm sure they'll go, OK, that's no problem. We just have to routinely check to make sure that everything's okay. If that makes sense, am I wrong there? What do you think? 086 60 25000, 086 60 25000, or give us a call on 074 91 25000. Right, we're joined on the program now by Professor Ken Mulpeter, who's a consultant in geriatrics at Letterkenny University Hospital. Professor, thank you so much for your time this morning. It's greatly appreciated.
Good morning, how are you?
You've been expressing concern about bed shortages, particularly for elderly people in nursing homes in rural areas. Can you explain that to us, Professor?
Yeah, I suppose the main thrust of my letter to the Irish Times was my concern that bigger nursing homes were being built as opposed to continuing small locally based nursing homes, and this has been done both by private nursing homes and the HSC. When I came here first 30 years ago, there was a large number of community hospitals, most of which still exist, and some of these had previously been local hospitals such as Donegal and Cairn and Dunloe. And in my naivety, I thought initially that these could be used as community hospitals serving people of all ages with minor illnesses, but it soon became apparent that really they were going to be essentially geriatric hospitals. Our Donegal was quite unique at that time and probably still is, with a large number of small units, roughly most of them about 40 beds around the county, and some of whom the public contributed to. And I suppose in general throughout the country, I'd like that model to be replicated. There's about 11 community hospitals or nursing units in the county, and then about an equivalent number of private nursing homes. But in general, there's a tendency now for particularly in the private sector, for smaller nursing homes throughout the country, actually, to get into bother, and that they're closing. I think it's probably a combination of various things, the economies of scale, and maybe having to put in large costs to tie in with HICWA, and maybe difficulties with getting staff in smaller areas. So I think, you know, in general, there seems to be a tendency to have bigger units and bigger urban areas. And I suppose instinctively, I'm kind of against this idea of large 120, 140 bed units, because I think it's difficult for them to be looked at as a home. When I worked in the UK, when one unit I worked in, they had, for the long stay unit, they had actually a hall door that you had to knock on with a knocker to get in, and just to reinforce the idea that this is somebody's home. And I think this is an issue that both for ourselves and particularly for the UK and nationwide, you know, our country, Europe-wide, how to look after our frail elderly people if they require nursing home care. Unfortunately, most of the people that are in nursing homes suffer from brain disease. They may have dementia or maybe stroke disease, Parkinson's disease, MS. And in some, you know, to some extent, I suppose, them having to go into a nursing home is a cost that is borne by people with neurological disease, which isn't borne by people, say, with renal failure or get dialysis, or people with cancer treatment. But I think we should always remember that these units are somebody's home, and they're not a hospital, and they should be treated as a home. And so that was the main thrust of what I was trying to say.
Is this being driven by or exacerbated by seemingly a smaller amount of private operators, that we are seeing more smaller privately owned places being either closed or taken over, and it, there seems to be fewer but bigger players in this market, in inverted commas, and I hate to put it like that, but they're not investing their money in this area to lose money. It is obviously a business opportunity for them. Is that driving it? Is that the cause of it?
I think so. I think that's to some extent, you know, I mean, I think the days of the kind of, you know, it's still present in Donegal, but the days of the family operator maybe are closing down. I mean, there's some well-known businessmen in Ireland, who I won't name, who own large numbers of nursing homes in the UK. So, unfortunately, I suppose, to some extent, you know, it's in the private sector, it is a business, and so business models apply from the point of view of how you maximize profits and minimize costs. And one of the ways of doing that is to have larger units. And there's all, you know, to be honest, like, there's, you know, you know, it's very difficult to have a home environment where there's 100, say, 120 or 150 patients, with most of the staff not being local, and people, a lot of the patients having dementia. So it's a very
Professor,
demanding.
Like, if these then, if we're moving away from nursing homes in all but name, what are we creating, or what is replacing them? Is it obviously people are going to have, it's going to be more difficult for people to visit if there's more centralization, more urbanization, that you know people aren't going to be able to look out the window to their own community as much as they would have in the past. But what are we creating? What is your concern when we have 120, 140, 160 bedded units? It's not a nursing home,
yeah,
really.
Well, in the past, you know, as you know, the county home was in Stern Order in St. Joseph's, okay, and everybody went to the county home, as was named. And then, you know, with Don Lachey in charge of the North Western Health Board at that time, then they converted some of the community hospitals into essentially nursing homes, and then built nursing units such as in Remelton and in Buncrana and Killybegs. Well, Killybegs came after Don Lachey. I thought that was the right way to go. Unfortunately, there's major problems in supply of carers, both in the community and in community hospitals. And sometimes, for instance, patients can't leave Letterkenny to go to a community hospital because they're understaffed and not all their beds are open. And I suppose looking forward in the days of full employment, there's a big question mark as to who's going to look after elderly people both at home in the form of home care packages and in nursing homes. And it's a very, it's a job that requires a degree of skill both in the home and in the hospital and the nursing homes, and the staff should be trained and should be rewarded for their work. I have personal experience of the home care packages looking after my mother when she stayed with me, and they were excellent. And I think we should continue to support that. Unfortunately, in the hospital at the moment, we have patients, about 20 patients at any one time, who are either waiting home care packages, which appears to be problematic in some specific areas within the county, or for a nursing home bed. And as I'm pushing on myself, I just maybe think more about where I'm going to end up. So
do you think, though, maybe I'll just, in a way, yeah. Like I think the HSE might be quite unapologetic in saying, you know, we want these facilities closer to the hospital. We've seen a system introduced recently whereby, rather than someone being discharged maybe to a local area, that St. Joseph's was used as step down or for non-acute care. There was a bit of a upset publicly about that, but it was just, look, that's the way it has to be. And you could argue, I'm sure, that with proper planning, we wouldn't be in this situation. And that ill planning is being used to accelerate this system that we're seeing right now. I mean, there's no reversing this, is there? I mean, because as I say, I don't think the HSE would apologise for what they're doing. They see this as the way forward.
Yeah, well, without being nasty, I suppose, you know, there is a sense that we're kind of warehousing elderly patients. So, and we're not the worst by a long, long shot around the country, because. And I wonder, I'm wondering years to come, 20 years or 30 years down the road, will we be having inquiries as to how we allow this to happen? I mean, a lot of the patients that end up in these nursing homes have dementia or, you know, maybe with other diseases. And they don't really have a say in where they're going to go. I mean, their families will do their best for them, but sometimes the only option may be a good spin away from where they're originally from. Elderly people have a long history of work and hobbies and their likes and dislikes, and you know, a patient may have worked in the UK, or one patient who built tunnels in Vietnam, you know, and they have colourful histories, and sometimes that's lost when they go into an institutional setting where people don't know them personally, don't know their backstory, you know. And I think if people knew those stories intimately, then it makes the job more interesting and it's better for the patient. So the idea of kind of, patients being nursed in a home, wherever a bed is available, it militates against that. But as you say, it's not anything new. I mean, that we have a bigger elderly population, which is in most ways is a good thing, but obviously the rate of dementia rises as you age, and so we really need to think a bit more imaginatively as to how we're likely to deal with this.
And I think people of all ages, even, you know, those 30 or 40 or 20 listening to us right now, might think this is a problem for older people right now, but as you say, you believe this is going to get worse, and it's very much in their interest to say, well, what kind of a country are we developing here? How are we going to be treating our older people? Because you know yourself, I don't know if it's casual language or intended, but, you know, if we talk about issues in our acute hospital services, it's the older generation, it's an ageing population, as if in some ways, if you were an older person, you might feel this is your fault or that you're a burden. Then there are other conversations happening about, you know, people making decisions about when they die, assisted dying, yeah, and things like that there. I am not trying to create something that's not there, but I think people of 20, 30, 40, 50 years of age need to keep an eye on this. What kind of a country are we developing here where we make older people feel that they are a problem, don't really prepare for their future care, and then we start talking about ways in which maybe people might, relieve the world of their burden, in inverted commas. A horrible way to put it, but I just would have my concerns that this is where we're heading.
Yeah, well, I mean, obviously with the dropping birth rate, there's a kind of the usual triangle, you're looking at the demographics of a population where the large base, and then as you go up the triangle, there's our pyramid, there's a much smaller number of older people, but that's changing now, and such that it looks almost like a rectangle or a pillar. So there's a decreasing tax base funding a larger dependent population, and that's a worldwide issue. So Japan are in major bother as to how to look after elderly. The Chinese are having second thoughts about their one-child policy because, again, they're running into that problem. And this is the same all across the Western world, I suppose. In the East and the South, I suppose in Africa and Asia, it's more usual for families to look after their elderly rather than put them in nursing homes. But it's kind of so. And I know there's a lot of discussion these days about immigrants, but most of the staff of nursing homes are immigrants, and because there isn't enough Irish people to provide the care, or they're not interested in that as a work choice. So we really have to make both home care and nursing home care more valued, better paid, and with a lot more training, if that's the route that we're going to go down.
Yeah, and also too, I want to throw into the teens, 20s and 30-year-olds now, unfortunately, far less likely to have their own property by the time they reach the ages that we're talking of, and you have to wonder how all that care might be funded as well. Okay, Professor, thank you. It's food for thought, and it's a problem now, and a problem that's only going to increase, I think, and we appreciate you sharing your views with us as well.
Okay, no problem.
Take care of yourself. Thanks, all right, thank you. That's Professor Ken Mulpeter, consultant in geriatrics at Letterkenny University Hospital. He says that we have to be careful that we are not replacing nursing homes with the level of care that we kind of might be familiar with nursing hotels or warehousing older people effectively. And as I say, it potentially could be a problem. Everyone tries to live as long as they possibly can, and rightly so, and more so are achieving that. But nursing homes are being offered financial incentives to house migrants and refugees. Some have decided that they can't make any money. They've exited it, and that accommodation is being used for migrants and refugees. But he heard from Professor Mulpeter there. We'd have very little staff if it wasn't for immigrants as well. So we have to be balancing our views of this stuff, don't we? Okay, we got this note in from a listener. I go for a walk in Letterkenny Town Park every day. There are two public toilets there are in an absolute disgrace. A man went in to clean them yesterday and he had to use a power hose. Today they've toilet paper lying everywhere again and people have been urinating all over the seat. I don't know how many times I've rang the council about them and they've never done anything about it. I was wondering if you could highlight this issue. They clean them once a week. They used to have a toilet with a door that opened with a button. That toilet hasn't been in operation for over a year. They now have two portable toilets that are not fit for purpose. A woman is just after opening the toilet door and she closed it again. She couldn't use it. The town park is a busy place. And what are families with young children supposed to do if they if their child needs the toilets? But also too, there's an awful lot of adults who need to have access to a toilet, as well as a children as well. Kiva is familiar with these toilets. Hi, Kiva. Thanks for taking the call. Are you there? No, I've lost Kiva. So I'll go through the comments. We can go back to that after 10. So we posted this on our Facebook page too to get a sense of what you're saying out there. Bridgin says, I go to the town park regular. The toilets haven't been in use for a long time. There's a stupid portaloo sitting there, which I wouldn't use. It's minging. Plus, there's no lock on the door, which is a concern. Karen, charged to use them. And then they're locked. And only if you use it, you pay to use them. What do you think about that? Would you mind spending a penny to spend a penny if it meant that you had clean toilets? I think it's a bit more inclined to pay for a clean toilet than parking. I'm not saying I would not be less inclined to pay for parking, but you know what I mean. Would you be in favour of paying 50 cent or something, but knowing that the toilets are clean and there's toilet paper and what have you? Caitlin says, I don't think paying would make a difference, though, because some people don't respect keeping any toilets clean, whether it's public toilets or public toilets in a public house or anywhere else. It's a pity because it spoils it for everyone else. Eileen agrees. Rachel, totally agree. And same goes for down at where those shops are at TK Maxx. No toilets either, but the councillors are too busy planning the big new motorway into Letterkenny to lose millions on. That being said, I think there are plans for toilets down there, Rachel. Geraldine, some people should be taught how to use a toilet and how to leave it the way it should be, which I think is we're kind of giving up on people's responsibility to actually go to the toilet properly. Isn't that the case? Because if we're talking about going into clean toilets, it's because people are piddling everywhere, pooing everywhere and making an absolute mess. Neve says, they are a disgrace. I had my wee boy at the park and he needed the toilet. I took him over, opened the door and closed it again. I took him somewhere else to go to the toilet. It would have been dangerous to bring a small child in there. It was covered in other people's excrement. James says, with respect, your problem seems to be that, and you referred to it, that they're only cleaned once a week. Then you go on to say, they were cleaned yesterday and basically unusable the next day. Is this the cleaner provider's fault or the people that use them? If they were cleaned every hour on the hour, it wouldn't matter. Animals would be cleaner. It's a sad situation to be in 2024, says Caroline. All kinds of medical conditions out there now, such as IBS, difficulties and many more. Diverticulitis and many more that leave people unable to leave the house, unacceptable in this day and age. And that's also what I was pointing to, that there are, it is children, of course, that one listener mentioned, but there are an awful lot of, and we've spoken on this programme quite extensively on it, that have to plan trips based on where toilets are and where they're available, and it can be really, really difficult for some. Monica says there might be toilets, but they're not fit for purpose. Anne wonders if people treat their own toilets the same. Possibly they do. Possibly they do. Anne says Rathmullen toilets are well kept. Some people have no respect for public toilets. And on it goes. Okay, if you've got a say on that, 086 60 25,000. It is the 9 till noon show. We're going to take a break for the news and obituary notices, and we'll be right back thereafter.